Kehlani Distribution versus FDA.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Jared Nabar for Petitioner, USVA et al. So, the FDA's 605B certification here that the 2021 PMTA rule would not have a significant economic impact on small businesses is erroneous as a matter of law, and in fact it contradicts everything the FDA said not only in 2016 but for a period of about 4 years after that until 2020. So, and as I highlighted in the briefing, the FDA's position ignores, in terms of legal error, it ignores the obvious and substantial material discretion they possess under the TCA, under the Tobacco Control Act, to determine the content requirements of a PMTA.
Let me ask you, under our review of the RFA, we focus on the procedure, correct, and not the substantive. It appears that you are challenging the factual underpinnings of that certification. Isn't that go beyond what our review is, which is whether or not the FDA followed the correct procedure?
Well, no, Your Honor. The challenge is, I think that does get to the heart of the argument here, and that's certainly the FDA's position, and that's what the district court essentially said. And I think the district court's analysis of that and that conclusion is really superficial. We are not challenging the FDA's determination on any particular fact relevant to the rulemaking. The argument is that basically the 605B certification is arbitrary and capricious for at least two reasons. One, there's no rational relationship between the facts that underpin the certification in 2021. There's no rational relationship between those facts and the FDA's conclusion that the PMTA rule would have no significant economic impact in 2021. And they're not rationally related for one reason, because the FDA did not complete its economic analysis that it started in 2016 using data based on the industry in 2021. So, in other words, we're not challenging their determination that there are X number versus Y number of people in the industry, et cetera, but they didn't use the right input. It's based on erroneous facts.
Well, the district court, you say the district court's analysis was superficial. The district court pointed to 20 pages where the FDA went into detail about the economic costs. It appeared that they did consider economic costs, but it sounds like from your brief what you're arguing is you're taking issue with the factors that they considered and the ultimate conclusion that they came to based on those facts.
Well, that's true. The district court said that there's 20 pages of analysis. The legal problem is that those 20 pages of analysis refer to only the costs that the FDA estimated with respect to sort of tangential costs of application of the rule. The sort of minor things that they decided in the 2021 rulemaking, apart from the PMTA content requirements themselves. In other words, in those 20 pages, there's no analysis whatsoever of the cost of the PMTA content requirements.
Let me back up. We've got two different rules here. We've got the deeming rule, which my understanding is not being challenged in this case, where an economic analysis was performed. The specific rule that you are challenging is the 2021 final rule that deals with changes in the methodology or changes in the submission standards. And what the FDA had determined was that the economic cost at issue flowed from the deeming rule, which is not being challenged, that the FDA's analysis was that the 2021 rule merely provided a streamlined process for submitting applications and providing more guidance for applications, and that did not pose a substantial additional cost. you keep referring back to the deeming rule. Why aren't we focusing on the 2021 rule, which is what you are challenging?
Well, let me say it this way. Because the costs and the determinations that the FDA made in the 2021 rule do not concern the actual content requirements, for example, for health risk investigations under the statute as a required component of the PMTA. The 2021 rule merely says it's essentially technical material about, you know, the format in which you're supposed to submit a PMTA, how you can potentially bridge multiple products together in the same application, these sorts of technical, you know, cross-referencing within the application, those sorts of things. But the FDA specifically said, and they made no bones about it, we are not reevaluating the costs or the FDA's determinations about what is required in terms of the health risk investigation component. They referred back, they said we did that in 2016, and we're not going to do it again. And the reason that, I mean, you're correct, Your Honor, we're not challenging the deeming rule per se, but the problem is that the FDA delayed its analysis of the cost of the most substantial, the most burdensome, the most costly component of a PMTA in 2016. In 2016, they specifically said we can't estimate the cost of a PMTA until we promulgate the rules regarding the content requirements.
This court is no stranger to these controversies. You know, we've had a bunch of cases about the PMTA regulations, one of which went to the Supreme Court and came back or went back to the agency. But my question is, didn't the agency say in 2016 that because of this deeming, it is likely that a lot of these small businesses will fail or that they will be subjected to great cost?
Yes.
All right. So now the agency is saying, sure, we came forward in 2021 or whenever it was, and we said now each company, ludicrous as it seems to a layman, has to provide your own health science report on why your particular product is not harmful, whatever. And that, even though that adds costs, and of course extraordinary costs, and even though you can't rely on FDA studies because we haven't done any, still, we're looking back to 2016 when we forecast correctly that this was going to be a hammer on the heads of all of these thousands of little businesses.
Well, that's correct. They did say that. It's still a problem that when they issued, let me say this first. The fact that the FDA delayed promulgation of a rule regarding PMTA content requirements for a subsequent formal rulemaking is an indication that they recognize exactly what I'm saying. The statute gives them vast discretion in how to determine what is required as part of a PMTA, especially with respect to health risk investigations. And also what we're missing here is any analysis ever. So even if we took their cost analysis in 2016 as sufficient, Judge Jones, the FDA has still indisputably never considered regulatory alternatives for small businesses to meet the statutory requirements in less burdensome ways. And that's what the RFA requires.
Well, let me ask you, because you said that in your brief, that the district court had cited to discussions by the FDA about the use of pre-existing clinical studies that could save costs going forward, and the possibility for user registries and a registry for other potential studies that could be used instead of de novo clinical reviews. Isn't that alternatives that the FDA may have considered?
Well, I think in order to assess whether the FDA properly considered regulatory alternatives under the RFA, you have to go to the statute itself. And this is the fact that's getting just completely ignored by the FDA and is sort of flown under the radar for the district court, but I'm trying to emphasize. If you look at Section 387, and it's cited in our brief summarized again in the reply, pages 8 and 9, which refer back to more, material in our opening brief, Your Honor. The statute itself vests significant discretion in the FDA to determine what is required, if anything, with regard to health risk investigations for any particular applicant. In other words, the statute, it doesn't actually require so-called health risk investigation studies by any applicant at all. It says they're required where appropriate, quote unquote, and the word appropriate is not defined in the statute. That's for the agency to determine in rulemaking. It also says that under 387G, the FDA can establish tobacco product standards. And then, in other words, the FDA could say, essentially, instead of leaving it completely open-ended in terms of how you demonstrate appropriate for the public health, the APPH standard, they could establish a tobacco product standard saying, for this category of e-liquid products, if as long as you have PGVG, that's propylene glycol and vegetable glycerin, they could list certain types of ingredients, flavoring types, a range of acceptable nicotine, requirements, content, all the other parameters that go into how these devices work, the draw strength, all the things they cite in their guidance. They could set a tobacco product standard under the TCA and say, okay, if your application meets these standards, then you, may be favorably approved. You can be approved for marketing. They didn't do that. And all through this case, in other words, in the 2021 PMTA rule, they dropped any reference to any such studies that the FDA itself might conduct. They don't even discuss the possibility of establishing a tobacco product standard at all. Under the RFA, and that's flown under the radar because the FDA never did. But here's the essential problem I want the court to focus on, because this goes to a bigger problem than just this case. If an agency can ignore this type of discretion that's vested in it under a statute and comply with the RFA by simply ignoring that discretion, never explaining why they considered or why those regulatory alternatives were not appropriate for small business here, then the RFA doesn't mean anything. The 2021 rule basically just leaves completely open-ended what types of health risk investigations are required in any application. Without ever acknowledging, without the agency ever saying that under what circumstances it might be appropriate for an application not to have to meet those requirements, or establishing its own standard that would set a bright line rule. That's the essential problem I want to get at. And Judge Jones, to put it in context of the other litigation, you're right, there's been a lot of litigation. I've been involved in some of it myself, so I know it pretty well. One of the cases that I had here was the Big Time Vapes case, which was a non-delegation challenge to the TCA, the deeming authority. And just to put this case in context, we lost that case. The Fifth Circuit said the FDA was not unconstitutionally the recipient of an overbroad delegation in terms of deciding what tobacco products should be deemed regulated under the TCA. Okay, fine. That's a very hard standard to meet. Essentially, any modicum of limitation in a statute is going to be a non-delegation challenge. All we're saying here on the other side is that, okay, now we're in this administrative law context where the RFA sets a very modest requirement on these agencies that have vast amounts of power over the American public and marketplace. And it only applies to notice and comment rulemaking, not all the other stuff that agencies do on a regular basis, adjudicating specific applications, et cetera. We're talking about a formal legislative rulemaking process where they're required to basically explain why other ways of meeting a statutory requirement.
Let me interrupt here. Didn't the SBA mention that problem at some point? That they didn't, that the SBA had problems with the lack of alternatives?
Well, they did. They said you erred under the RFA by not engaging in those.
At the present time, my understanding is the FDA is reconsidering these regulations. Is that right?
No, they're reconsidering after Wages and White Lions remand from the Supreme Court. They're reconsidering whether specific applicants met the requirements for a marketing order under the PMTA rule as it stands now.
As it is now.
As it is now.
Interesting.
Right, and that's why this, I see my time is up. I reserve time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. Right, Ms. Shams.
Good morning, Sophia Shams on behalf of the government, may it please the court. Plaintiffs bring this suit challenging FDA's 2021 final rule for failing to adequately consider the impact of pre-market authorization on certain tobacco products. But all of the significant impacts that plaintiffs are concerned with are imposed by the Tobacco Control Act and were already considered by FDA in its 2016 deeming rule. Because FDA properly certified that the 2021 rule will not impose a significant impact on a substantial number of small entities, the district court properly dismissed plaintiff's claims at summary judgment.
But that's patently not true. It's going to put them out of business, right?
Your Honor, the 2016 deeming rule acknowledged that the requirements for pre-market authorization, which are imposed by Congress under the Tobacco Control Act, will have a substantial impact on small entities.
Well, maybe I'm just quarreling about semantics here, but for the agency then to say, after it recognized this fact in 2016, then in 2021 or 22, when the onerous requirements for the PMTAs were issued, the agency says, oh, well, that's not anything. But that's really not right.
Your Honor, I think that there's a...
Maybe it's semantics, but...
I don't think it's necessarily semantics, but I think it's a misunderstanding of where these requirements actually come from. So the requirement to submit health risk information comes directly from the statute. It comes from the Tobacco Control Act. The 2016 deeming rule, which extends those requirements to applicants like plaintiffs, that rule considered the impact of having to submit this type of health information. And it said that impact is going to be substantial. It's likely going to drive entities out of the market. And so it considered all of those impacts in accordance with the RFA. What the 2021 final rule does is it merely streamlines the process, for submitting applications.
Well, of course, it didn't streamline anything because it resulted in 100,000 applications.
Your Honor, actually, the 2021 final rule was based on reviewing hundreds of thousands of applications. And FDA said there's a lot of inefficiencies that have been in the application process, and in order to streamline the process, we're going to give formatting requirements, we're going to give more explanation of how you can submit electronically, ways to supplement and resubmit applications, and then post-record keeping requirements. What it does not do is impose the requirement for health risk investigations that plaintiffs are talking about. Actually, what the rule does is it states, and I direct the court's attention to page 55, 357, and 58 of the rule itself, which says there is still flexibility in accordance with the TCA. We decline to require that an applicant conduct a list of new studies as part of every application under this rule because there may be other ways in which an applicant can provide scientific information to inform FDA's review. That is the type of flexibility that the Tobacco Control Act acknowledges and that FDA has repeated here in the 2021 final rule. So with respect to the types of health risks that plaintiffs are going to have to submit as part of information for their application, those are all concerns that stem from the Act itself. They don't come from this rule. And those concerns, while the FDA has acknowledged are substantial concerns in its 2016 deeming rule, plaintiffs aren't challenging the 2016 deeming rule. That rule has been challenged. It was challenged in the D.C. District Court under the RFA, and the D.C. District Court rejected that challenge, and it reiterated exactly what I'm saying here, which is that these requirements come from the Tobacco Control Act.
How do you address the SBA's concern about the lack of discussion of alternatives?
So I think with respect to the lack of regulatory alternatives, the D.C. District Court also discussed this in NECOPEER when it addressed the regulatory flexibility analysis challenge there. If the concern is that FDA hasn't invented almost these types of health report requirements, the D.C. District Court there said these requirements come from the Tobacco Control Act itself. It's not a regulatory alternative to just exempt entities that are subject to the Act's requirements and free market authorization from the requirement to actually submit health risk information. But if we're talking about post-record-keeping requirements, which the 2021 final rule does impose, but plaintiffs haven't really challenged here, those regulatory alternatives were discussed, actually, in FDA's 2021 impact analysis for the final rule, and it stated there that post-record-keeping analysis is going to be really important for having health information and understanding the impact of these tobacco products, and for that reason, it didn't forego those requirements. So I think that there's been plenty of analysis here with respect to the regulatory alternatives that are attributable to this rule. But when it comes to what plaintiffs are really concerned with, which is the health risk impacts and having to provide any sort of scientific information with respect to the products that they're seeking to market, those concerns all stem from the Act. They don't stem from the 2021 final rule, and they were already considered by FDA in the 2016 deeming rule. I think that point is reinforced by plaintiff's briefing itself. They don't cite a single part of the rule or 2021 final rule when they talk about having to submit health risk information. If you look at the 2021 final rule, it merely reiterates what the Tobacco Control Act says with respect to having to submit this information. And so we really ask the court to just look at the text of the statute, the text of the rules, and see that these requirements are stemming from the Act and not from any of FDA's regulations that are being challenged here. If there are no further questions, I'm happy to sit back in.
No, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. We have to
All right. Mr. Navar, rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Again, I can't emphasize this enough. The TCA does not set the requirements for a PMTA in terms of health risk investigations. We cannot ignore the statutory language which says health risk investigations are necessary and may be required where appropriate, quote unquote. No definition of appropriate. If you read further in the statute, it says that an application can also be approved based on, quote-unquote, other evidence. Further in the statute, it makes clear when the FDA reviews an application, it can be approved based on other evidence. That doesn't have to come from an application. In other words, it can be based on the FDA's own knowledge, own studies, its own information. Those things were referenced in the 2016 deeming rule, which is why the FDA only did a truncated cost analysis and didn't complete it. They said we can't complete it until we decide what to require in a PMTA. That's an allusion to the vast discretion they have under the TCA content health risk investigation content requirements. And then what happened is 5 years later, they just basically never did the work. I don't know if they got overwhelmed with the applications or if it was, you know, political considerations, whatever it was. The kind of discretion that they referenced repeatedly in 2016 and in the statements of the FDA director for 4 years after that, all the way through 2020, saying we intend to regulate robustly in these new tobacco products, but we have to determine the rules of the road, specifically talking about PMTA content requirements. That's an allusion, again, to the FDA's discretion to determine what to require under the statute. Because it's not set out in the statutes. It specifically gives the FDA discretion. And then in the end, if they want to promulgate a final rule after having said, you know, we'll promulgate a final rule later once we think about it, if in the end of the analysis they come back and say, as they did here, they just leave it completely open ended. Basically, it's just repeating what the statute says, you know, submit health risk investigations where appropriate, et cetera. Then fine, they have that discretion, but they have to, in terms of the RFA, they have to provide a reason why they didn't find the other regulatory alternatives for small business sufficient to meet the statutory requirements. And again, to emphasize, the FDA's position now, after we filed this lawsuit, contradicts the position that they made, that they had in the 2016 rule itself, where they said we can't estimate costs until we write the rule, and it contradicts the FDA director's statements for the number of years since then, and that is the definition of arbitrary and capricious rulemaking. If an agency changes its position without even acknowledging it, much less providing a sufficient explanation. And in terms of the RFA, as I was, you know, trying to make the point earlier, I just want to complete this thought. Again, you know, people like my clients who are small businesses, you know, subject to regulation like this from the federal government, they don't have a lot of options. There are some modicum of protections, one of which is the RFA, which requires this very simple analysis by the agency. The agency still has vast discretion to reject regulatory alternatives if they want to, even if they find small businesses are going to be thrown out of the market. Fine, but they have to give a reason why those alternatives are not going to meet the requirements of the statute. And that's the legal error here. And I would point the court just to one case on this issue, because the FDA just continues to ignore the fact that it has this discretion to determine, for example, when is the health risk investigation, you know, robust application appropriate in terms of the statute? Or when can the FDA rely on its own studies? Or when can they set a tobacco product standard? And why did they do so here? The one Supreme Court case, AT&T versus Iowa Utilities Board, it's 525 U.S. At 391.92, is the court's discussion of an analogous situation where they said, basically, when the statute says you have to do things when they're necessary or when there's an impairment standard in the statute, the agency erred as a matter of law by not defining how those terms were applied in the regulation. And that's the same situation here.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have your...